India identifies a new COVID-19 strain of concern known as the Delta Plus variant. Meanwhile, the Delta variant has now reached nearly 100 countries. Also, later on in the program, we'll be joined by House Deputy Speaker Lauren Legarda on her bid to return to the Senate next year. And Liberal Party President Senator Francis Pangilinan will speak to us about their plan to create a broader coalition for the 2022 polls. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad to have you with us today. Our top story, India declares a new COVID-19 variant of concern. The variant, identified locally as Delta Plus, has been detected in 3 states. There have been nearly 24 identified cases. The Delta Plus variant is showing increased transmissibility. Although the number of new infections in India have dropped to their lowest levels in over 3 months, experts called for the ramping up of vaccinations. On Monday, India vaccinated a record 8.6 million people as it began offering free shots to all adults. But experts doubt if government can maintain that pace. The World Health Organization confirming that the original strain of the Delta variant spreads faster than any other coronavirus strain found so far. This variant has been detected in at least 92 countries, threatening gains made worldwide.
In Africa, the number of cases and deaths increased by almost 40% in the past week. And in some countries, the number of deaths tripled or quadrupled.
The WHO assures the public the current COVID-19 vaccines are still effective against the Delta variant. America's top infectious disease expert calls the Delta variant the greatest threat to America's efforts to eradicate COVID-19. Dr. Anthony Fauci says the transmissibility of the variant first found in India is unquestionably greater. The Delta strain is also associated with increased disease severity.
Similar to the situation in the UK, the Delta variant is currently the greatest threat in the US to our attempt to eliminate COVID-19. Good news, our vaccines are effective against the Delta variant. Conclusion, we have the tools, so let's use them and crush the outbreak.
More than 150 million people, or 45% of the U.S. population, have already been fully vaccinated against COVID-19. However, the White House admits it will fall short of its goal of vaccinating 70% of all adults in America by the 4th of July.
Where the country has more work to do is particularly with 18 to 26-year-olds. The reality is many younger Americans have felt like COVID-19 is not something that impacts them, and they've been less eager to get the shot. However, with the Delta variant now spreading across the country and infecting younger people worldwide, it's more important than ever that they get vaccinated.
The most notable symptom of the Delta variant is having a headache. That's according to UP National Institutes of Health Executive Director Eva De La Paz, citing a study done in the UK. She adds, the Delta variant is 60% more transmissible than the Alpha variant.
Maraming batang taong nai-infect, pero madalas din kasi ay inaakala nila that it's just a bad cold and they tend to not self-isolate. Nakita na sa mga pagpapabakuna ay yung one dose ng vaccine ay less effective. Pero kung nakadalawa ka naman, ay makakapag-protect pa rin strongly sa mga tao ang may bakuna, lalo na pag dalawang doses na.
The Philippines records 3,666 new COVID-19 cases Tuesday. That's the lowest daily tally in a month. However, the low figure could be attributed to the failure of 12 testing labs to submit their data in time. The number of active cases stands at 52,696. Meanwhile, 60 additional fatalities and 6,810 more recoveries were also reported. While the average number of daily infections in the country has decreased by 8%, there are still areas of concern. These include Davao City, Bacolod, Iloilo City, Cagayan de Oro, and Tacloban. Albay province currently lacking in COVID-19 vaccines. Albay Governor Al Francis Bichada says the national government has only delivered around 6,000 doses to the province, but he says they need to vaccinate 46,000 individuals just to cover the A1 to A4 priority groups. Albay currently has some 1,958 active COVID-19 infections.
Ang problema namin, kung konti yung bakunang dumarating, kakaroon ng local transmission, lalo na yung mga government personnel, saka yung mga sa mga bangko, yung mga tellers, yung cashier, yung mga essential workers.
The chairperson of the Metro Manila Development Authority insisting vaccine priority should still go to the National Capital Region. That's despite calls to allocate more doses to provinces experiencing COVID-19 surges. MMDA Chairman Benher Abelo says Metro Manila remains the most susceptible to the virus since it is the center of e-commerce and the country's main port of entry.
Christians being Christian, tulungan natin sila. But what I'm saying is that all things equal, kung meron ka pang sobra, kung meron ka pa naman sobra, i-prioritize mo na ang Metro Manila. Because according to the expert, really, is that all surges always begins with Metro Manila. Now they're fighting the UK variant. They're up against the South African variant. We've been through that. We've been through that before.
Abelo says the vaccination rate in the NCR is now at around 200,000 daily and is increasing with the help of the private sector. A nurses group demanding benefits and compensation for Filipino health workers as the COVID-19 pandemic rages on. The president of the group, Filipino Nurses United, says government should set aside the 18.4 billion pesos in unobligated funds from the Bayanihan to Recover as One Act for the country's healthcare workers.
The benefits that are under the Bayanihan to the active hazard duty pay and the special risk allowance that were promised to them last year, they were delayed. Why is it that they were not able to provide them with the necessary benefits and compensation when in fact there are still so much budget?
The younger generation, seen as the weak link in Israel's world-leading COVID-19 vaccination rollout. And as this report tells us, Israel is now pressuring parents to get their kids inoculated due to fears of the more transmissible Delta variant.
Israel's impressive COVID-19 vaccine drive is now targeting teenagers amid a rise in cases blamed on the Delta variant. Around three-quarters of the country's population within eligible age groups have already received their shots. But Health Ministry data says that only includes 2-4% of 12 to 15-year-olds since the group was given the green light this month. After daily cases more than doubled on Monday, after outbreaks at two schools, many reluctant parents are now feeling pressure to put their children forward for the vaccine. Yizhak Nivo is one of them.
We came today to vaccinate Hen. She is 13 years old, and I was waiting until the Minister of Health will give the approval to vaccinate her age. When it arrived, there was no more COVID in Israel, so my wife said, leave it. But now, after the COVID outbreak and all this situation, I said, today, I don't give a damn, today.
I wanted to get vaccinated so I don't get the disease. I'm very scared of it.
The Health Ministry recommended parents vaccinate their 12 to 15-year-olds on Monday. It's even investing in outreach programs to get parents to bring their children in for shots. Israel's two largest healthcare providers say appointments for teen vaccinations have doubled and tripled in recent days. But some parents, like Eldad Askoff, aren't convinced.
There was a debate, but at the moment we feel that we don't want to vaccinate. We prefer that. It seems like if we can control it without getting vaccinated, the kids, we prefer that.
It's a dilemma. Experts say there will be no herd immunity if the younger generation is not vaccinated. But Israel's handling of the coronavirus so far has been so successful that it's dropped almost all social distancing and will open its borders to vaccinated tourists next month. Israel uses the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine on its population, but its effectiveness against the Delta variant in the country is not yet clear. Some studies abroad, where Delta is more common, have found the shot to be effective.
School trips, but with new safety protocols, have returned to Washington, D.C. as the pandemic wanes nationwide. This report.
It's kind of cool. I appreciate that we're able to be here right now.
In a latest sign that life is returning to normal, students from around the U.S. are once again flocking to the nation's capital. It's a trip that's become a rite of passage for many students, but came to a screeching halt during the health crisis. A welcome change for eighth graders like Evan Savoy from Clarkston Junior High School in Clarkston, Michigan.
All of a sudden, instead of you guys can't even be doing your sports together, we don't recommend going to each other's houses. So all of a sudden they're like, all right, on the bus, everybody, we're heading to Washington, D.C., which is great.
Clarkston Junior High School had pushed back their Washington trip for a year, waiting until the COVID-19 case numbers were low and enough tourist sites were open to make their 10-hour bus trip worthwhile. But it comes with new safety protocols that didn't exist pre-pandemic, says Clarkston history teacher Mike Grieve.
Filling out a temperature chart every day and checking their temperatures at the end of the day and taking, we all took COVID PCR tests before we came here to make sure that we were, COVID free. Even if you're vaccinated, make sure everybody's good. Just like really a lot of different hoops to jump through that we're not used to.
Not all tourist sites are fully open yet, limiting school groups to mostly outdoor stops, including a walking tour of Arlington National Cemetery, photos outside the White House, and a Nationals baseball game. The Washington Monument, for example, was closed to visitors. Still, students are happy to get back to some sense of normalcy.
It's just great to finally be on this trip.
In other news, more than 60 million Filipinos have registered to vote in next year's elections. The Commission on Elections says of this number, more than 800,000 are first-time voters. Voter registration continues in areas under general community quarantine and modified GCQ from Mondays to Fridays from 8 in the morning to 5 in the afternoon. There are also satellite sites that allow voter registration on Saturdays. The Comelec aims to register up to 63 million voters before the September 30 deadline. Well, a number of former senators eyeing a comeback to the upper chamber. One of them is Deputy Speaker Antica Representative Lauren Legarda. She will be running under the Nationalist People's Coalition. Congresswoman Legarda now joins us on the program. Congresswoman, good afternoon to you, and thanks for joining us today. Nice to see you again.
Good afternoon to you, Carmina, and to the whole ANC team. It's been a while. I hope everyone's safe and healthy. Congratulations on being a new mother. I just found out today. Anyway,
Thank you. Hope
everyone watching are safe and sound. Yes, ang daming pag-uusapan, ang daming dapat gawin. Diretso na ako sa pag-ahon, pag-ahon sa pandemya at hindi lang yun, pag-ahon din mula sa kahirapan at sa pagbibigay ng pangkabuhayan sa mga tao.
Yeah, so Congresswoman, I want to get to your decision. What made you decide to have another go at the Senate?
Thank you for that. I was in the Senate as a very young senator in 1998. I served 3 terms, proud and inspired to say that most, if not all, of the environmental laws and the laws on women, children, I either authored or sponsored. I have to make sure that these, especially now in the time of pandemic recovery, are implemented efficiently and effectively and funded, and that everyone understands. Second, while I am so inspired, and I've done, if I may say so myself, a great deal in just 2 years in Antique, I was able to bring national government programs, policies, and projects closer to the people that they have not had or felt or experienced in 3 decades, 30 years. I believe I have much, much more to share, to give both Antique as a province and the 80 provinces of our country, of the 108 million Filipinos I love dearly. And Carmina, in the 2 years I've been Congresswoman, not one person has called me Kong. Even in Antique, they call me Sen, Senator. And you should see the emails and the texts and all the help on Facebook in all parts of the country, including the Autonomous Region in Muslim Mindanao and in the Cordillera, in far-flung barangays, asking for help in the 1 year and a half of the pandemic.
Yeah, but Congressman, let me just get this in edgewise. You had the front seat, as you said. You were closest to the people. From a national level, you became a representative of Antique. You were this close to the people, seeing the impact on their lives. Why exchange that for another go at the Senate? Isn't that the dream of a public servant, to really see how the policies that you enact really affect people's lives?
That's true. I've seen in my 2 years how the laws that I've authored in my 3 terms are actually applicable and benefit the people. I also see the need for a different kind of pandemic recovery. Kailangan natin iakma ang ating pag-ahon mula sa COVID-19 at sa iba pang mga mangyayaring pandemya ayon sa pagbabago ng klima na krisis. Let me say it in English. I sincerely believe that the pandemic recovery is not just a health issue, that it must also be an economic recovery of every Filipino household, that the pandemic recovery must be attuned to the climate pathway. And these were laws that either I authored or are pending in both houses of Congress as well. Sa aking pakikipanayam sa mga tao, ang aking alam, ang aking malawak na karanasan sa panunungkulan sa nasyonal at pati ngayon sa 2 taon sa lokal ay higit na makakatulong sa pag-ahon natin mula sa pandemic recovery. At if I may say, several months ago, I was invited to a virtual cabinet meeting where my views on health, on even vaccine rollout, and on many issues, including livelihood, were secured. And I'm so grateful that as a congressman of 300 more representatives, I was asked as a former senator in my term, my views were actually implemented, my suggestions. And I'm continue being urged by many of non-Antiqueños, but outside of my province, we need you now. Who am I to say no if there is such a calling, if I may? Because I said, I cannot leave my district. But then again, we see the bigger picture, and bringing national government programs closer to the people at this time is so important. I will repeat, the pandemic recovery must be attuned, akma dapat, sa ating pag-atak sa problema ng kalikasan at sa pagbabago ng klima.
When you talk about the bigger picture, I want to focus now on what you just said, the environment and having a climate-proof future for the Philippines. Yes. You are one of those who are really out there way before it became popular, way before people started taking it up as their advocacy. But as your brief stint of Antique, as Antique governor, congresswoman, I should say, what were the disconnects? You've helped shape the country's policies when it comes to environment and climate proofing our future. But when you talk about your experience in Antique, were there any disconnects and gaps from national to local? Go ahead.
Carmina, hindi lamang sa Antique, kundi sa buong bansa, ay magagandang ating ibang mga nalahad na polisiya at mga batas. Una, may mga hindi napopondohang batas. Pangalawa, may mga hindi efficient or maayos ang pag-implement. At pangatlo, kailangan ng amendahan. At sabi ko, hindi lang ang pagprotekta ng ating kalusugan, kailangan economic recovery. For example, yung ginawa kong batas nung ako'y bata pang senador, yung PESO Law, Public Employment Service Office. Yan ay nasa batas, na amendahan na yan. Pero ito ay sa bawat probinsya at munisipyo. Sa tingin ko, ngayon, kailangan natin bigyan ng pangkabuhayan ang bawat barangay. Iakma natin ang mga natural resources at yung skills at talento at yung pangangailangan ng tao at yung rate of joblessness per barangay. 42,000 plus barangays. So, ako'y naggawa ng panukalang batas na Barangay Employment and Entrepreneurship Office para amendahan yung aking ginawa noong 1998 na ngayon ay biso. Isa lang yan sa maraming mga panukalang batas na tingin ko ay dapat ay karapat dapat at makakatulong para umahon ang mga household. Dahil ang ating macroeconomics din, tignan natin ang ating ekonomiya, huwag na tayong humiling na bumalik na sa dati dahil yung dati nga ang nakawasak ng ating buhay. Kailangan ang ating macroeconomics ma-mainstream ang resilience, ma-mainstream ang sustainable development, ma-mainstream ang climate emergency at crisis, at dapat maintindihan, maramdaman ng bawat sektor ang epekto sa kanilang buhay anumang lugar sa ating archipelago.
Okay.
Mga tao. Yes.
But Congresswoman, when you look at reality, come 2022, it's going to be a crowded race. It's going to be a mixture of, you know, there are a lot of cabinet secretaries that want to have a go at the Senate. You have familiar faces. So tell us very briefly, why would the Senate need the same names? Why should there be a place for you still? You said it yourself. You've had three terms.
Yes. It may be the same names, but it's a situation the same now as before. Ang iyong alam, your expertise, your wisdom, your knowledge, and your experiences, will it serve the best interest of the Filipino people at this time? Do you have the competence? Do you have what it takes to be able to help in this pandemic recovery so that it is resilient, it is sustainable, it will provide resilient rural livelihoods, it will save the lives of our women and children and indigenous people and our senior citizens, it will resonate with the youth of our country. And that is what made me define my decision in consultation, of course, with lots of people from my district and all over the country.
Congressman, a while ago you said that you got invited to a cabinet meeting and they listened to your suggestions, they heard what you had to say, implemented some of your suggestions as well. The question now is, how divergent will your stand be from the current administration's policies and agenda? Because that seems to be one criticism that has been hurled against you, Congresswoman, that you have not really been critical of this administration when you should be, that you have kept silent when you have spoken up, Congresswoman. Okay.
You know, Carmina, by nature, I'm a builder. I'm a creator. And we only have 24 hours in a day. And the work I do locally, regionally, nationally, and globally does not even give me enough time to build and to comply with all these. Now, I define my policy. If I'm divergent from the others, I say so in a statement, in a press release. I speak about it. But that is my way of conversing. I join the national discourse and I respect other people's opinions. Not everybody may think the way I do, just like I may not agree with some of the policies. And I say so calmly in the way I know how. And that's for people who know me, even when I debate in the Senate. I'm essentially a builder, and I believe that what we need in leadership now are people who can build, who can unify, who can heal, kailangan natin ihilom ang mga sugat, hindi lamang sa politika, kundi na rin ang mga sugat ng pagsasamahan, sugat pa rin ng kalikasan, ng planeta, at kailangan natin pag-isa-isahin. Dahil kung hindi tayo sama-sama at walang unity, mahirap labanan ang kalaban na hindi natin nakikita. And I tell you, this pandemic will be more, just like the climate crisis, will be more intense, it will be more frequent, and as we see, there are different variants if we do not use science-based solutions. So as I said, there's so much to do, but for me to be very vocal and to about my views will entail a lot of energy, and my energy is focused on creating, building, and solving. It does not mean I will not speak my mind when I do not believe it is correct. I do. Maybe it's not seen on print or on digital all the time, but my statements will stand on record every day as my report card to the nation.
What do you say to those who still criticize you for being loyal to a president who has committed a lot of atrocities under his term? One of which, of course, is the closure of your home network. People still think of that day when they hear of your name. What do you say to those people?
Well, first of all, as you know, I'm one of the authors of the renewal of the franchise. And as you very well know as well, you saw my statement that at the time, I could not vote in favor. I had to abstain because I've ongoing programs on the network, on the station where you have. In fact, we just aired the result documentary, and I've ongoing programs at Dayaw. So it would not have been appropriate legally if I had voted in favor. So I believe that the network where I had glorious days of my life in the service of the Filipino must reapply for the franchise. I will help in any way, as I did behind the scenes, because I was not chairman of the committee. In terms of the voting, I adequately and sufficiently explained the legal reason why at the time I could not vote because of the ongoing numerous airtime and programs that I was producing and involved with and hosting up to now with ANC. I wish I had cast the pang 13th or 14th vote. They know where my heart is, and it's been adequately explained for those who read my statement at the time.
Yesterday, we had your party mate, Governor Cheese Escudero, on the show as well. He did confirm that he's also going to run for the Senate. And I asked him about the kind of leader that the country needs. You sort of touched on that a while ago. He did say, though, that the person has got to be a healing president. But my question for you, Congresswoman, is can healing begin without holding President Duterte accountable for the countless deaths, for the pandemic response?
Yes.
Go ahead.
First of all, I welcome Cheese, and I'd be happy to have him back in the Senate. Pray God that we could be together there. Yes, correct. A healing president, a unifying leader. But I would like to see which of those who will actually run will have a sustainable development agenda for a resilient, healthy, green Philippines. I want to see all the laws that I authored and, let's say, the pending legislation on natural resource accounting mainstreamed in the agenda of the next leader. Whatever lacking in the leaders now and in the past, yes, I am certain that there are the mechanisms, both legal and political, both national and global, that will hold them accountable for every piece of action. But what in the agenda of everyone who will run for the highest and the second highest office, I would like to see the mainstreaming of sustainability, the mainstreaming of the climate agenda, because that is the only way we can actually recover from this pandemic, to bring about culture-based rural livelihoods, to bring about healthcare up to the barangay level, to bring about an educational system that will respond to even possible pandemics in the future.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. We've run out of time. Congresswoman Lauren Legarda, nice to see you again. Continue to keep safe. Take care.
Thank you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot. All right, from there, we're going to take a break now. Up ahead, we'll keep our focus still on the 2022 elections as we speak to the president of the Liberal Party, Senator Francis Pangilinan. Stay with us. You're on Dateline Philippines here on ANC. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. India identifies a new COVID-19 strain of concern known as the Delta Plus variant. Meanwhile, the Delta variant has now reached nearly 100 countries. And the chairman of the Metro Manila Development Authority asserts Metro Manila should still be prioritized in the country's vaccination drive. That's amid concerns over the more transmissible coronavirus variants. The Liberal Party reaching out to politicians outside the party who are considered among the top candidates in the 2022 elections. The LP is doing this in the hopes of creating what it calls the broadest possible coalition. How is that effort going so far? Joining us now is LP President, Senator Francis Pangilinan. Senator, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, well, thank you for having us. And good morning. Good afternoon to everyone. Good afternoon.
All right. So yesterday, the news was you're reaching out to at least four people. You have Senators Pangilo Lacson, Joel Villanueva, Nancy Binay, and Manila Mayor Isko Moreno. What do you see in these people? What did you see in them that first triggered this whole idea of you reaching out to them?
Well, first, let me clarify. No, this is really in the very initial stages. We are really more focused now on the COVID response. I was just asked the question, and the media was asking about the LP preparations. And I said, our focus is on the COVID response. We have chapters that are providing assistance and support for an effective COVID response, relief, etc. The vice president, our party chairperson, has been focused on the COVID response. So the talks are very informal and at the initial stages. And it's not exclusive. The broadest coalition possible will require as many as who are sincere in wanting a new a better approach, for example, to COVID, a more effective handling of our economic crisis and, of course, the health crisis, and who believe, for example, that daily killings is something that is unacceptable. So we are in. It is a work in progress.
What are your non-negotiables, though, as initial as talks are at this point? Does the party have non-negotiables as you continue to reach out to possible candidates?
I was asked that, and I said, if in 1986 there were certain non-negotiables imposed by Cardinal Sin or Butch Aquino and refused to go to EDSA because... both Ramos and Enrile were Marcos architects of martial rule, and therefore no way. Then di wala yung EDSA. Fast forward to 2000, if Cardinal Sin Chavit Singson went to the Archbishop's Palace seeking refuge because his life was endangered, and he confessed. And if Cardinal Sin said, no, I cannot support you and give you refuge because you're part of the inner circle of the administration, then there would have been no impeachment trial, perhaps. These twists and turns, no, in in the unfolding of history, ika nga, should give us pause to think about who should be in and who should be out in terms of a broad coalition and unity towards, I'd like to think, a better response to COVID, a more effective response to the economic crisis, and the upholding and addressing, you know, other challenges of the country. A clear example for my side is, are we happy with how this policy on the face shield is being played out? A simple policy as whether or not we should wear face shields continues to have, you know, has not been resolved, or is on again, off again, and nakakalungkot isipin na kung ganun po tatakaran ay hindi nagkakaisa ang administrasyon, eh doon pa kaya sa mga komplikadong mga issue. Mm-hmm. And nakakalungkot isipin that in the middle of a pandemic, while people are dying, I don't think anyone today would have no knowledge of somebody who died. A friend of a friend, etc. People are dying. And here we are, undecided as to whether or not, or pabalik, pabago-bago, paiba-iba, as to whether or not face shield should be worn. Hmm. It's like we are a para tayong barko na nasa gitna ng bagyo. Kinakailangan natin mailigtas yung barko at yung mga pasahero. Pero yung kapitan at yung crew, hindi maliwanag kung anong direksyon, at paiba-iba ang desisyon. And if we're interested in moving to a right, to another direction, then the broadest unity behind that should be supported.
Okay, so let's talk about that. What are you willing to compromise? Because a while ago you were talking about the non-negotiables, but we all know that the Liberal Party has been...
You raised the question of non-negotiables, and I told you we have to have a broader view. No?
Yes.
And the bottom line is, for as long as there is a sincere desire, no, to change the direction of the nation, then everyone is welcome to the talks. And we're talking here of talks. We're not talking here of tandems. We're not talking here of who should be president, who should be vice president, etc. Mm-hmm. We're simply talking about who should be involved in the efforts to unite, who should be included in the efforts to unite.
Okay, so let's zero in on that. There has to be a sincere desire to change the course, to change the direction of the nation. That seems to be, at the very least, what should be present in all these people that you're talking to, reaching out to. But should that be the case without holding the administration accountable for the atrocities committed under or during its term? Is it an either or? What if a person you're talking to says he doesn't believe in prosecuting Duterte?
Well, you know, at this point, it's all speculative. We don't know. We're looking at possible scenarios as to who we should align to and who should be held accountable. And yes, there are basic fundamentals as to who should be held to account. But again, we should focus on how we can come together. And we should be willing to set aside differences. It's as basic as that. The talks have not started, by the way. It's just the initial reaching out for possible talk. So I am not really in the position at this point, but the individuals, in fact, the individuals mentioned, I mentioned the Binay, Senator Villanueva, Ping Lacson, and others. It's not exclusive. We'd like to have more. We should also reach out to Grace Poe. No, we should also reach Lauren Ligada, Sudero, if they're interested in running. Lauren just said yesterday, I think, that she's interested to run. That's where we're at. It's yes, I understand media wants specifics, but sometimes specifics cannot be given considering precisely, factually, hindi pa nga nag-uusap. The media asked me yesterday, lumabas lumabas si Vice President Lenny together with Scott Moreno. So sinasabi sa akin, oh, tandem na ba yan? Sabi ko, we have not talked about tandems. So what's there to say? We're just talking about how can we unite behind, you know, a common agenda of addressing effectively COVID, the worst economic crisis since World War II and the worst health crisis since in 100 years. Mm. And people deserve answers to these, you know, solutions to these, to the crisis that we're facing. And that's what we should offer, a different approach to how the government, the administration is now addressing the COVID, the crisis in health and the crisis in the economy, joblessness, hunger, poverty, among others.
Yeah. And Senator, one would think that it should be easy, right, to unite behind that. When you talk about COVID response, when you talk about the health of the economy, of the people, one would think that it should be easy, but it's not. We're talking about Philippine politics here.
That's correct. That's correct. And the other thing is, I think, and I've said this before and I'll reiterate it, before we even start talking about candidates, I think we should start talking about the voters. 13 million of our voters, of our citizens who are eligible, 18 years old and above, 13 million are not registered. In the last elections, 2019 elections, our estimate is youth and students, 18 to 29 years old, anywhere between 7 to 10 million were not registered. It's sad because many have given up. Many have tuned out. Many are saying, wala namang mangyayari. It's useless. Sabi nga nila, iisa lang ako. What can one vote do? And with that kind of attitude, we've reached 13 million saying the same thing, probably. Na wala namang mangyayari. And that's why I think, regardless of your political leanings, we all should convince our voters, our eligible voters, to register and take matters into their hands. Ika nga, di ba? Be involved. If we are unhappy with what is happening to the country, if we want better in terms of the COVID response, if we believe that we should be able to have a more coherent decision-making in terms of interventions, and of course, the issue of corruption is still there. Overpricing of medical equipment in the time of COVID, etc. If we want change, let's start with registering. You're a hamon, and I think every citizen concerned about the country, if you're not registered, lalo na yung kabataan, magparehistro tayo. Gamitin natin yung ating kapangyarihan mamili.
Kanina, Senator, napag-usapan natin si Senator Nancy Binay, no? Senator Panfilo Lacson. I understand that you said it's still in the initial stages of the talks, but we know that Senator Panfilo Lacson said that he's also in the period of discerning whether he's going to go for the presidency or not. We also know that the Liberal Party has said that Vice President Lenny Robredo is the most qualified to run for president. But she has not decided.
Yes, that's right. So we are all in the process of taking this one step at a time before October. But in the meantime, precisely, everything, you know, is fluid. But we have to start somewhere. Unfortunately, I cannot give the media the information that they'd like to receive that could give nice sound bites, because precisely it's still a preliminary discussion. No tandem, no Senate slate, nothing. At this point, we're still, as I said, in the nascent stage of these talks.
How difficult is it for you as party president? I mean, 2022 is a big one for everyone. And it's very important for the Liberal Party. How difficult is your job right now to be able to give the people the option that you think they should hear from or that they need, Senator?
Well, I'd like to think that in the end, it's not my job alone, and that we have to really precisely reach out, talk, cobble together a working unity so that we can spread the burden of unity elsewhere. So, and I'm, I guess, a hopeless optimist in that regard, that one day our future will be better than the precedent, than the present, rather. And that we will have leadership that will truly address the challenges of the country. So we just have to plod on. Kailangan lang matibay ang ating dibdib. Sabi nga sa akin eh, para kang pinukpok ang ulo mo sa, kumuha ka ng bato at pinukpok mo sa ulo kung ikaw ay lalaban sa 2022, lalo na sa dami ng demonization paninira. No? But, well, we can't give up on our children.
No? And, yeah. And, so have you, you're throwing your hat into the race too, right?
Yes, I have one more term, a six-year term, and I feel we have just scratched the surface of redirecting the course of agriculture policy in the country. We've had a number of interventions, but, you know, we'd like to see, we'd like to follow through. We cannot hope to reach developed nation status. We cannot hope to achieve addressing poverty and hunger if we don't secure our farmers, our fisherfolk, and address the challenges of agriculture and food. And it can be done. So I felt I will be best in a better position if I'm in the Senate. You know, funding, for example, for agriculture has been minimal. Infrastructure spending, for example, in the Philippines, from the time that I first entered the Senate up until today has increased tenfold, from about 60 billion to almost over 600 million for infrastructure for public works. But if you include transportation, it's almost a trillion. From about 150 billion. If we spend that much for infrastructure, we should be able to spend, you know, a considerable amount for agriculture. You know? Infrastructure is important, yeah, but food is important. So I'm looking at maybe a 5 to 7 to 10-fold increase in budgetary support for agriculture, and I feel the Senate is the platform for that, and that's why I hope. Precisely, to run for re-election.
But is it going to be as easy considering that, you know, the seats there with LP party members, that's dwindling. That number is dwindling.
Yes, it's a challenge. It's an uphill battle. None of our candidates won in 2019, and we've learned lessons. Sabi nga nila, you learn more from defeat than you do from victory. And so hopefully the lessons learned there, we will be able to avoid the pitfalls and then you know, overcome the challenges for 2022 in terms of election victory. Hindi madali, pero sabi nga nila, we can't give up on our children, and we can contribute. We can contribute, and we'd like to in that regard, with the support, of course, of our voters.
Okay, I want to end with this question because, you know, I've talked to several already of you who have confirmed that you will be running, and all of you also saying that what we need is a unifying precedent. What we need is unity, a healing precedent. But then can you really do that? Can you achieve unity and healing and all that good stuff without taking Duterte to justice?
I think that should be part of the process of renewal and transformation. I believe since I was in my activist days in UP until today, that there is no, you know, there can be no justice without, you know, accountability. And therefore, that has to be part of the transition and transformation. Hindi naman pwedeng yung mga nagkasala ay hindi mananagot. Regardless whether kakampi o katunggali, di ba? The system of justice is to work. And that's precisely one of the other challenges. The reason why we have impunity is because the system of justice needs to be put up to speed. The reason why there is little respect for the rule of law, because the system of justice precisely is slow and pretty much inutile up to a certain extent. And justice is slow. You know, our conviction rates are at 30%, 20%. Our vacancies in our courts are over one-fourth of our judgeship positions are vacant. Half, nearly half, or 40%, 30 to 40% of our prosecution positions are vacant. The system of justice also needs, is crying out for reforms. And that's why you have impunity, because people can get away with it. So these are all intertwined in terms of moving forward. How do we address all that? There is a lot of money, say 700 billion pesos worth of government funding is lost, COA said this, to corruption. Can you imagine if that amounts, even just half of those of that amount goes to judiciary modernization, speed up the system of justice in the country, reduce the shelf life of cases to at the most 2 years, fill up all those vacant positions, give them better pay so that the system of justice will be will not be dysfunctional, it will be modernized, and justice is not only swift, it is fair. When that happens, then you will have impunity on the retreat, and that will, and then we will have a nation that is ruled by law. These are some certain things we can certainly do. These are things that we can certainly do in the next 10 years. But the 2022 elections is really critical in terms of helping redirect the course of the nation.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Liberal Party President Francis Pangilinan, and also you have a new moniker now, Dadvisor. Am I correct?
Yes, please like, subscribe, and share. I have a YouTube channel, and it was launched last Sunday. And so it's fun, but it's about family, farming, and food, which are all very essential, I think, for the country and for the individual, for our citizens. Thank you. And
thanks.
Dadvisor YouTube channel. And I have another one quick joke. I said it in the other stations.
Why?
Bakit father ang tawag sa ating mga tatay?
Bakit?
Kasi pagkatabi mo siya, parang kang nakasandal sa father.
Father. Bye. Bye. Lunchtime na, Senator.
Oo, gutom na nga ako. Thank you.
Okay, bye. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Stay safe.
Yeah, you too. All right, time for a break. Still ahead, the Phoenix Suns move closer to reaching the NBA Finals. We'll have the latest in sports when we come back here in Dateline Philippines, here on ANC. And we're back with some sports action. The Phoenix Suns are now up 2-0 in the NBA's Western Conference Finals. The Suns took Game 2 against the Los Angeles Clippers 104-103 thanks to a well-played final possession. Trailing by one with less than a second remaining, the Suns got the inbound pass to center DeAndre Ayton, who completed the alley-oop dunk. The Clippers had one last attempt to win the game, but, well, they fell short. Cameron Payne led Phoenix with 29 points and 9 assists, while Ayton finished with 24 points and 14 rebounds. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.